Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. And my very special guest today, and I do realise that, yes, I always say my very special guest, it's because everybody's so special. He's Jay Widener from jaywidener.com. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Well, and in fact, one of my best friends and bandmates has been on at me for months to get you on this show because he's such a big fan. So I'm sure it will not disappoint. So, with that in mind, you got your bio here on your website. Called by Wired Magazine an authority on the Hermetic and alchemical traditions. What is a Hermetic or alchemical tradition?
What are they?
Yeah.
The alchemical traditions are, it's alchemy, you might say, was the science before science. And it was a combination of keen observation and natural processes. And it may have been developed in Egypt originally, whose original name was alchemy. Or it may have come from even earlier, possibly a Lemurian or earlier civilizations. But basically, it was a result of what might be called thousands of years of observation of nature, brought by a highly advanced civilization that was completely open-minded. And so they would examine, you know, every day take another herb and make a tincture from it and then see what effect it would have. And over a long period of time, this civilization that I'm speaking about, whoever invented alchemy, the civilization that invented alchemy, after a long time of this kind of experimentation, they began to make some significant discoveries concerning healing things from plants and also how to transmute metals like lead into gold and things like that. And also the ultimate end game of alchemy is to create the elixir of life, an elixir which allows you to extend your life out to 700, 800, 900 years. And this civilization that invented alchemy a long time ago withered away, but the tradition carried on, and it's still being carried on today, and I'm one of the few people left on Earth who, you know, actively seeks to recreate a kind of alchemical science, you might say, where we can observe nature, or the vastly declining nature at this point, and then use that to maybe reinvigorate nature and ourselves.
And in terms of hermetic, does that have anything to do with somebody who's kind of left a town and gone and lived in the hills as a hermit, hence hermetic?
Actually, it does. Hermit and hermeticist are the same thing in a lot of ways. Peter the Hermit was a famous hermit from Europe, and he would go from village to village and make things better. It was almost like Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, where he, in fact, Gandalf is an alchemist, where he goes from place to place and he's kind of interfering. If you watch Lord of the Rings, you'll see that Gandalf is constantly manipulating and interfering, but he's doing it for the right reasons. He's trying to make the world a better place. And that's what Peter the Hermit, the famous hermit, that's what he was famous for, and maybe Gandalf was even based on Peter the Hermit. But the hermit basically was your European shaman. The shamans, like in South America, are known for living away from the central village. So if you go to visit an ayahuascaro in Peru or in Brazil, generally you'll go to the village where the tribe lives, and then the chief or the person in the village will then take you out into the jungle way far away from the village where there's a little shack where the shaman lives. And so the shamans, you know, generally are hermits. They live by themselves, or they like to explore the world without the interference patterns of other humans. So it's not that they don't like humans, it's just that it's easier to meditate, it's easier to contemplate with less noise.
How interesting.
Yep.
Does that mean that basically our society, as we've been kind of clustered into these human hives, seek to detach us in its entirety from nature or any form of balance?
Yeah, one of the big problem with what's happened in the modern world is that the magical societies that were traditionally part of our cultures were hijacked around 1750, actually, and Masonic organizations and all those were hijacked. And what happened was, previously, these organizations were peopled by highly advanced hermetic scholars and alchemists. But after this kind of rebellion, excuse me for one moment, after this rebellion, the kind of vicious materialists took over these organizations, and strictly for their own purposes. They wanted the occult knowledge for power. And this group that was running these organizations before was at odds with this new group. And so there became a war, a war that still continues to this day, between the magical group and the profane group. And right now, the profane group seeks to destroy and take over the entire world. Excuse me.
Okay. Well, I think the evidence of that is kind of
excuse me.
In every single direction you look, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. In terms of a rather profane group of scumbags trying to take over everything, yeah, you can't walk out your door or switch on your television without seeing it.
That's right.
I don't know what you're looking for.
I'm losing my voice now. Right. Yeah, that's right. And so many people, like on the network you're on, are trying to get this out right now, get the truth out about the people that are running the world and what they're trying to do to us. And it's starting to scare the rulers. They're starting to get a little bit worried that we're actually reaching some kind of comprehensive cohesion here. And Sandy Hook, the Sandy Hook tragedy is a perfect example of the fear that these guys are under. We're actually being told here in the United States that if we question the official story of the Sandy Hook massacre, that we can be arrested, which has never occurred in this country before. And what's ironic about that is that the reason that these conspiracy theories are forming around Sandy Hook is not because there isn't a lot to wonder about it. It's because the mainstream media has refused to report. And so the conspiracy theories are popping up to fill the vacuum. And that's the problem. The major media can't really report the truth anymore because they're in the back pocket of the monsters that run the world. So they can only tell a superficial stories without really any investigation, because if you investigate it thoroughly, you'll find that the dark powers are inside of under every rock. Every time you turn over a rock, they scamper like cockroaches. And so the conspiracy theorists are now becoming the only ones that you can actually hear the truth from, even though mostly they're wrong, because at least they're willing to speculate about something. And this thing, this bifurcation between the dark powers that rule the world and the powers that are seeking to awaken humanity, this is going to come to a head here very soon, I'm afraid. And I don't know how they're going to react. I suspect that they're going to do something stupid and actually make us look good. And so right now, you know, it is a very interesting dance between the awakened and the asleep.
Now, I also wanted to ask you about this this kind of movement away from the current establishment, and whether or not coming out straight away and opposing it, like they say yes, we say no, instead of just going, they say yes, we say, I'm not listening to you, I'm doing this instead.
Yeah, it has to be asymmetric. If you're 5'9" and you weigh 130 pounds, and you're going up against a guy who's 6'5" and weighs 270 pounds, you're just a fool. And that's what that is. That's what we're short and small and light, and we're faster than they are. That's true. But you go head to head in a symmetrical battle with them, they will crush us completely in seconds. So, no, we have to be asymmetrical, which means we have to do that which is not expected. And so exactly what you just said. So they come to us and they say, yeah, your child will be drafted by the military and sent to Afghanistan. And then we say, no, they're not. We're just not going to do that. And they say, well, then we'll have you arrested. And you say, okay, well, then you can come arrest us. That's fine, but they're not going to Afghanistan. And the same thing with GMOs and the food and every single aspect of our lives, we have to start saying no. No has to be our favorite word, but we have to be a nice no. It has to be no. We understand why you're doing what you're doing, but we think you're wrong, and we're not going to do that. And then by example, we will change the situation. And they know that. They know that. We're not stupid enough to go head to head with them. There are some people, like here in America, Alex Jones is trying to go head to head, and he will either he's an agent or he'll be crushed. There's no other way around it. So it's kind of stupid to go head to head against a guy who's so much bigger than you. So I use martial arts analogies of where if a 6'5" guy who weighs 270 pounds is going after a 5'9" guy who weighs 130 pounds, there is one way that 5'9" guy can win, and that is if he knows martial arts and uses that guy's weight against him. So that guy comes at him, he rope-a-dopes him, you know, the guy falls eventually exhausted on the ground, the big guy, while the little guy's just been running around trying to avoid getting hit. And that is exactly the way that we have to do it. We have to be fast and light and loose and willing to shift because they're big and fat and unable to change their mind in any way. And so we now know that is their weak points. And we know our strong points, which are very many, and we can now begin to undo what they've done. And I think we're actually going to succeed if they don't end up killing us all, which they could.
Mm. Have you seen the movie Enemy of the State with Will Smith and Gene Hackman?
Oh, that's a wonderful film, yes.
All right, so in that film, there's something what you're kind of alluding to there is, I think the line from Gene Hackman was, in guerrilla warfare, you use your weaknesses as strengths.
Yep.
If your enemy is large and you're small, hey, you're mobile and they take ages to move anywhere. And I've noticed this now with the new media coming out is scams and false flag terrorism events get exposed within hours,
exactly.
Minutes even.
It's driving them crazy. It's driving them crazy. And, you know, there's nothing a journalist, I'm a journalist, I used to be a journalist, there's nothing a journalist hates more than getting scooped, especially by someone who's not a journalist. And so they're taking umbrage right now that they're being scooped. And I'd like to get into this because I have a very, very interesting explanation for what's going on right now and why the media is actually looking like a bunch of buffoons. And it has to do with this Sandy Hook thing, but it's a bunch of other things too. So what we have here is if we look at this Sandy Hook tragedy, it's very interesting. We have a reporter goes up to Newton, Connecticut after the murders, and she's walking down the street and she meets a person who identifies himself as the principal of the Sandy Hook School, who then announces that who identifies herself as the principal and then tells a whole bunch of inside stories about what just happened at Sandy Hook, and this reporter, thinking she's got this big scoop, runs with the story, you know, prints up the story, the principal, I talked to the principal of the school today, and she said this and that. Well, the principal had died that day. And And so the local paper, which reported this incident, you know, they retracted the, oh, you know, that didn't happen. We're sorry, never mind. But they never said what happened. Who was this person who said it? And why did they say that they identify themselves as the principal? They never looked into the story. So just put that aside. Now remember that there's strange incidences going on here. Who uploaded Obama's fake birth certificate to the White House website? Why would Obama put up the multi-layered Adobe Illustrator software when all he had to do was put a screenshot of the birth certificate, and no one would ever look behind the, into the layers of the Adobe Illustrator software and been able to see that it's all a fraud? Yet somebody lifted, put the entire file up so we could look and see how they manipulated the thing. Who would do that?
Jay, unfortunately, we're coming to break now. That was the fastest first segment like I think we've ever had on the show in like 3 years. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Jay Widener from jaywidener.com.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly
puppet
gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein control.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, if you please. My very special guest today is Jay Widener. And Jay, I'd like to quickly jump back to what we were talking about before the break, which is Sandy Hook, if you remember where you were.
Yeah, I do. It's very important. So what I'm trying to say is that Obama didn't put up the fake birth certificate. Someone hacked into whitehouse.gov, and put up the file. I'm saying that someone else posed as the high school principal on purpose that day. I'm saying to you that the reason that the media looks like a bunch of buffoons is because they're being handled a plate of, you know, scrambled food or something, and they have to like sort it out, and they can't because there's another agency running around screwing with the criminals that are in charge. And I don't know who it is, but it's the only explanation for all this anomalous activity that I'm beginning to see, that there's another group somewhere who has access and power but is actively against the New World Order. And they are the ones that are throwing the wrenches, the monkey wrenches, into the machinery. And get guys in the U.S. and the media like Anderson Cooper, and they're trying to tell their story, but the conspiracy people are pointing out all the flaws in the story. Even before he gets done with his reporting, he already looks like a hypocrite, and he's lying to us, and he may not be lying to us. He may actually think that what he's been given is true, and he can't figure it out any more than we can figure it out. And so I'm looking now into and positing that there is a second force almost as powerful as the New World Order, with access to all of their tools, able to hack into the White House and able to have an actor walk down the street posing as the high school principal, and they're doing it on purpose. And they're doing it as to throw an anarchic wrench into the machinery.
So with what exact purpose? I mean, end game, if you will.
Okay, let's take the birth certificate. What would... thinking people went and they saw the birth certificate, and then they saw that the Adobe Illustrator layers, and they saw actually how they could back engineer, people with intelligence that is, back engineer through the software, via the software, how the birth certificate was faked. Now, anyone can do that, okay? Anybody. I can do it. You can do it. Anybody. The New York Times can do it. You know, anyone in New Zealand, anyone in Australia, anyone in the world can go and look at this, right? So, we look at it, we know that it's a fraud. We know that it's a fraud. So then what's the next thing that happens? You say to yourself, my goodness, why isn't someone in the press looking at the software and back engineering like I just did, right? And then you say, oh, my goodness, the press is completely controlled because they would. This is something they would jump on in a split second if they're really true journalists. But they're not really true journalists. Then someone is screwing with them, and they cannot explain the contradiction in reality. In fact, no one on the conspiracy side can explain the contradiction of Obama's birth certificate being released with all the software and the layers being visible either. In fact, the only explanation that makes sense is the one that I'm positing, that it wasn't Obama who put up the birth certificate. It wasn't, you know, the CIA who posed as the high school principal and when she was already dead. It was someone who knew that Sandy Hook was going to happen before it happened. They were there on the spot with their actor to act like they were the principal. They were the ones who told the filmmakers to put Sandy Hook in the Batman movie. That is what's going on. Somebody is trying to alert us, the awakened people, to what is going on out there, and they're using tools that we find surprising, and until we realize what is being done, we're going to be just as confused as everybody else. But once we realize that we have friends who are sending us clear messages, we're just not seeing the messages, then we will understand what's happening, and they can, we can use them as our allies to overthrow these guys who are about to, frankly, kill us all.
Now, in terms of overthrowing, I watched a movie not too long ago about South Africa and how the South African government used its intelligence agencies and police and military to surveil, attack, demonize, and essentially destroy black leaders. And it was only once the black leaders promised that there wouldn't be any recompense, like, for example, once being given power, they would seek reconciliation for the country rather than revenge killings on the whites who had suppressed them for so long. And I thought about how the New World Order might react to this kind of mentality. What if we gave them the option to surrender? They get to retire to their mansions and live out their lives in luxury, but relinquish all control and power over the people and not have to suffer consequences.
I'm totally in favor of that, and I think that's about the only way that we're going to be able to do it. I'm really not in favor of any kind of violent upsurge, because that's just going to backfire. And besides, that's symmetrical warfare. We don't want to be involved in that. So the overthrow has to be the overthrow of a gentle overthrow, a velvet revolution. And I think that's perfectly fine to take the South African model. You know, okay, you screwed us over for all these years, but we're not going to be like you. We're going to let you go. We're going to let you go to your houses and live, but don't you ever mess with this again, ever. And if we take that tack, they might actually do it. The powers that be are pretty scared right now, or they wouldn't be doing things like Sandy Hook. And it's not working. On top of everything else, it's not working. I mean, nobody's going to give up their guns in the United States. And if that's the goal of this operation, was to do that, which I think it was. Now, I personally was not even involved in Sandy Hook. I'm too busy in my regular life. Outside of that, I did notice the odd behavior by the grieving parents and by people who were neighbors and things. And I did get on a radio show and mention that I thought that the behavior of the people was odd. But I also, in that same radio show, which was a national show here in the United States, I said, you know, to the conspiracy theorists, we have to be really careful here. You know, there's grieving families, and there's they weren't all actors. That's insane. They could never do a cover-up that big. It's completely nuts. And I cautioned everyone to be really careful.
Who was saying that they were all actors?
Oh, that's a big, huge thing going on right now in the United States, is that everybody, all these people are saying, everybody in Newton, Connecticut is an actor, and the whole thing is a setup, which is literally ridiculous. You can't keep a secret that way. So my plea for responsible behavior was met with an attack by a national news outlet, Salon.com, a liberal news outlet, who attacked me viciously, character assassinated me, and this is the first time this ever happened to me. And so I thought, well, why would they attack me when I'm the one who is actually saying that we got to calm down and not run, jump to conclusions? And then I realized that it was because I had cautioned everyone to keep a cool head that I was then targeted. So they could have targeted a crazy wacko, but it wouldn't have done any good. But by targeting me, they tried to character assassinate me, and because I was cautioning responsibility in this by the conspiracy community. So what that did, what that attack did, was it actually got me to focus on Sandy Hook, which is not what they want. They do not want someone like me spending 8 to 10 hours a day focusing in on their Sandy Hook operation. I guarantee it. So it was a huge mistake by them, because now I'm in it, and I'm finding a lot of anomalous things, and the explanation that they have for what happened is complete and total bunk. And I don't know what else to say.
Speaking of strange anomalies, I'm a big movie buff, in case you haven't noticed, and I was looking through this long list of online movies, and one of the titles jumped out at me. It was called Sandy Hook Lingerie Massacre.
Yes, I know about it.
That was made in 2000.
Yes, unfortunately, I have not seen it. It's probably a terrible movie, but yeah, it is very interesting. Very interesting. And a lot of the cultural angles... The Dark Knight Rises, of course, which had the Sandy Hook reference in it, is in itself a very interesting film. The plot itself is extremely interesting. A secret society sends in a ruthless thug to destroy the order of Gotham City, and he lets out all the criminals who become part of an Occupy Gotham thing, and then finally Batman defeats the evil thug, and he's literally stabbed in the back by the head of the secret society, who's posing as a liberal. It's a very, very interesting movie. The political contradictions of what is going on right now are really quite explicit explicitly shown by Christopher Nolan. I don't know if he is part of this cabal that is fighting against the ruling cabal. Or the plot would certainly seem to say he is, and then the Sandy Hook reference in the movie is also extremely interesting. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that movie, except that it seems to me a fairly stark warning.
Well, it's quite odd when you think about it, how many strange coincidences there are, and you could drive yourself crazy trying to figure out whether or not they are coincidences or deliberate.
They're deliberate. They're not coincidences. At my old age, I can say this because I'm 59 now, and I've been at this for a long time, and I wrestled with myself for years about the coincidence factors of 9/11 and the JFK assassination and all the others. But now I've now reached a conclusion that they're not coincidences, that there are counter-opposition groups that are what they're really trying to do is to give us messages. And I think we're failing to hear the message. I really do. And I even think, like, the murals at the Denver airport. At first I thought they were kind of an in-your-face kind of thing by the New World Order. I know that they were put there by the New World Order. I have no doubt about it. But I think somebody wanted us to know what the plans were, and they put them into those murals. And I, over and over, I see this kind of evidence. And that, there's one group of people, oh, well, the Illuminati have to tell you. It's part of their thing that they've got to tell, the people what's about to happen, even if we don't understand it. And I say, well, why? Why do they have to do that? That's kind of stupid. And
they're not doing it.
What's going on is there's another group, and they're trying to help us.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking it was kind of like the Riddler. He always leaves these elaborate clues on his crime scenes and stuff like that, and runs away going hee hee hee.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I'm not saying that isn't true. I would say that that might be true about some things, but about Sandy Hook, the reason I don't think it's true about Sandy Hook is because there's so many of them. And you can actually see the look on the reporters. They don't know what the hell is going on. I'm talking about the lead reporters that are trying to report it, except for the propagandists, who are also becoming kind of obvious that they're working for some agency. It's obvious, like Anderson Cooper. And so you see these things are like, what I think they want is for us to go overboard with Sandy Hook and say something really stupid and get some grieving parents after us. So far, we haven't done anything stupid like that. So I think the questions that are being asked are really good questions, and they have not been answered. Now it's come out that a witness has said that the Lanz's car, all four doors and the hatchback were open. There were four uniforms, black uniforms, inside the car with the guns. It's like, wait a minute here. Why would a guy open all four doors and the hatchback? You know? It's like, what?
It's just weird. And another element that I wanted to kind of elaborate on is that reporters, people think that because you're a reporter that you know what's going on. And I had an interview with a guy named Ian Wishart, who's one of New Zealand's top journalists, you know, award-winning, was the host of the New Zealand equivalent of 60 Minutes, the Sunday program. And he said to me, Vinny, look, journalists are airheads, okay? They're morons. They have no idea what the hell they're doing, and they really are just focusing on getting their next Gucci handbag and wondering what they're going to do on their next trip to Tahiti most of the time.
I'm afraid.
I'm inclined to agree. And,
yeah,
unfortunately,
I would.
And that's a great place to leave this segment as well. We'll be right back after the break to talk about more moronic journalism on mainstream media. Hey, and also, I wanted to splash in here. We're not the alternative media, folks. Alternative means that there's something else that's established and reliable. We're the new media, which means everything else is old and crusty. We'll be right back.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Final segment of the first hour here with Jay. Is it Jay Widener or Widener?
Widener.
All right. Excellent. I had a joke that I came up about you. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. How do you make a doobie larger?
How?
With a Jay Widener.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you actually laughed. A lot of people thought that you'd be offended, which is good. Okay.
It's pretty hard to offend me. I was a writer for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Good to know.
Yeah.
Now, one topic of which I have been asked many times to get you to elaborate on is Stanley Kubrick, one of my favorite filmmakers. Mm-hmm. What exactly happened to that guy? There's been rumors and speculation that he's been assassinated because of the movie Eyes Wide Shut, but I have not looked into it.
Well, I think it's interesting, again, that he was assassinated 666 days before January 1st, 2001, which, of course, is his most famous movie. And I don't think that's a coincidence. But, I mean, was he murdered or not? I don't know. Filmmaking is a physically arduous experience. I just finished making my second feature film of my life. I made a lot of docs, but this is my first feature. And and I'm in pretty good shape. And, you know, it's like being in combat. Every day you have to get up at 6 and you work until 10 or 11 at night. And he was 70 years old and he was a chain smoker. So it could have killed him. I'm not going to say that it couldn't. But I do know that the Warner Brothers executives were extremely distraught after they viewed the first showing of Eyes Wide Shut, and I know that they asked Stanley to edit it, and I know that he said no way. So I think that the whole thing with Eyes Wide Shut is very mysterious, because the his daughter Vivian Kubrick, who was really the light of his eyes, and really she was going to be the upcoming artist in the family. She became a Scientologist in 1994, and she wouldn't come home to see Stanley or his family. And the fact that Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise were two top Scientologists were in, you know, the 1999 film, you just have to wonder if it wasn't some kind of negotiation or finagling going on between Kubrick and the Scientologists, where they would let, you know, their two top Scientologists star in his movie, if maybe possibly he could get his daughter back or something. I'm just speculating. I know he wrote a 40-page letter to Vivian in, I think, 1997, begging her to come home. She did not come home. I don't think she came home for his funeral. I don't think she came home for her sister's funeral a few years later. So, the Scientologists have got their clamp on Vivian, and I guess they're not going to let her go. And I don't know what interplay between them and Stanley was. I know that the Scientologists, they firmly believe that the Illuminati is out to get them. Whether you agree with Scientology or not, and I don't know anything about it that much, but except for how it started, which is a story in itself, which also the origins of Scientology are in the backstory of Eyes Wide Shut, which will be in my new film, Kubrick's Odyssey 3. But so there are some links between the film and Scientology, but I don't know. And but I was I thought the plot of Eyes Wide Shut was really kind of a Scientology plot, where Operation Monarch beauty queens are used in these sex orgies and then discarded when they're no longer needed, and if you investigate it, you'll be, you know, they'll come after you, and all the people at the orgy were, you know, the big movers and shakers of the world, and he shot the orgy at Nathan Rothschild's mansion outside of London. And so there's all these things. So I don't know if he was making a movie that the Scientologists would like, or he was hoping that would give him some cachet with Vivian, or if he was truly trying to make a movie exposing the Illuminati. It was one of the two. Either way, I think he probably paid for it with his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have this aversion to looking at films and thinking that they're entirely fictional and they don't really mean anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like everything that comes into an artwork is based on truth. There's an old quote, I think it might be by Mark Twain, is fiction has to make sense.
Exactly. Unlike truth.
Whereas the truth doesn't.
Exactly. A lot harder to write fiction. Yeah. That's funny. I agree with you, and I think that the best movies are those that are based on reality. I could call to mind Chinatown, Roman Polanski's great movie, and how that was really based on the Los Angeles water wars, and people really did die fighting these wars over water, you know, in the 1930s in Los Angeles. And you know, most people don't realize that. And when you go see Chinatown, you're enamored by the great acting and the cinematography and what a great movie it is, and it is a great movie, without really realizing that it's about something very, very true.
So in terms of yourself, I mean, how many different works have you really produced over your lifetime? I mean, how many documentaries, are you writing books, that kind of thing?
Let's see, I've written two books, and I've made two feature films with actors, soon to be three. I'm going to start on my next one. And I've made, I don't know, somewhere between 20 and 30 documentaries. I wrote several really bad Hollywood films, which I'm not going to tell you what they were because I'm so embarrassed by them. And I had a national radio show here in the States, and now I'm running a well-financed alternative television network, which it's a startup that I'm running. So I have I think you would probably like it. It's called Gaiam TV, and GAIAMTV.com. It's an online network that is very, very cutting edge and getting better at it. So it actually gives me great hope. So I've been at this a long time, and, before that I was a journalist and written articles for the L.A. Weekly and, you know, all over the West Coast. And so I've been around a long time, and I've managed to do it all without getting cynical, which I'm very proud of.
Yeah, that's quite hard to do.
It is. And I am cynical, don't get me wrong, and I get disheartened, but, you know, not as bad as a lot of other people.
Yeah, yeah. The other element is, how long have you been doing this? And more poignantly, how much criticism have you really endured? Because my philosophy is, as soon as you tell the truth, you realize that both sides of that exact argument come out and attack you, because neither of the sides of the argument are true.
Well, yeah, I like to tell the story that when I first started out doing this stuff, it was about 25 years ago, I had a radio show, and it was a very popular radio show, and I would get invited to parties. It was in Seattle, Washington, and I would get invited to parties because I was sort of semi-famous in Seattle, and I would go to these parties, and people would say, oh, well, I heard your show. Tell us about, you know, I don't know, the Kennedy assassination, or, you know, who really killed Martin Luther King or something, and I would start telling them what I knew. And, you know, and this is, you know, a long time ago, people were not open-minded at all. And I would see their faces start losing their color, and I'd see their jaws starting to drop, and then I would see, you know, the shaking of the head, no, of course, always shaking their head, no, like there's no way anything I'm saying could be true. And then, you know, like 15, 20 minutes, the host of the party would come up, put their arm around me and say, you know, Jay, maybe you better go. You know, this party might be better without you. And this happened to me quite a bit. And I've noticed recently now when I go to parties that I'm not only the center of attention, but they want me to stay. I usually only want to stay for about a half hour, and they're begging me now to stay for the whole party, and I don't really want to. So something has changed. But, yeah, criticism. The first, what happened to me, I was young and naive, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I thought that the whole world wanted to hear all of this news that, you know, now, like you talk about and like is on your network, that now is ubiquitous. Back then it wasn't anywhere, and there was no internet. And so I thought everyone would want to hear all of this interesting news and conspiracy. And so I foolishly got on the air, and my ratings went sky high, and they gave me another show, and it went sky high. And then mysteriously, what I now realize was a counterintelligence program or a COINTELPRO program was unleashed against me. I had guys parked in front of my house day and night. I was being followed. They threatened my wife, who eventually left me because she was tired of all the harassment. And the person who hired me at the radio station was fired. The person who came on next worked for 2 years to try to get rid of me, and finally they managed to get rid of me. And so, yeah, I mean, I've had terrible things said about me over the years. But, you know, I wear it as a badge of honor, actually.
Yeah, well, it just seems to me that if you're telling the truth and you get your life messed up because of it, I don't think anybody has any credibility when they say that you're an agent or COINTELPRO-op yourself. You know what I'm saying? We'll be right back after the break with Jay Widener, ladies and gentlemen.